Welcome to Pop Culture Happy Hour. It is 12:40 a.m. on Monday, and we are up late to tell you that the Grammys were a big night for Bruno Mars.
He swept the top categories and performed with Cardi B. But there's a lot more to discuss. We had performances from Kendrick Lamar, Kesha. It was a busy night. I am Stephen Thompson.
And I'm Linda Holmes. We've brought in reinforcements from NPR Music, and we'll be talking about who got really lucky and who got robbed. So don't go away.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Starbucks. For the past 43 years, Starbucks has served their bold signature espresso. But for the first time ever, they're introducing a second espresso, Starbucks Blonde Espresso. It's smooth and subtly sweet. So whatever your drink is, from a flat white to an iced Americano, try it with Starbucks Blonde Espresso. And as always, you can order ahead on your Starbucks app.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. We're here talking about the Grammy Awards, which ended only a short time before we came into the studio. You've met me and Stephen, and with us tonight from NPR Music, Rodney Carmichael. Hey, Rodney.
Hey, how are y'all doing?
We're good. We're so glad you could be with us. Also from NPR Music is Sydney Madden. Hi, Sydney.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
These are both new voices to us, but they come to us from NPR Music, so we know that they're excited about the Grammy Awards. Stephen, you
and excited.
Stephen, you and I have been covering the Grammy Awards together for many years.
Many years now.
What stuck out for you tonight?
My three-word takeaway from the Grammys, Grammys gonna Grammy. Uh-huh. The Grammys are gonna do what the Grammys do, namely disappoint. They are going to, particularly in those major categories at the end, Album of the Year, Song of the Year, and Record of the Year, they are going to take five nominees. The voters are going to look at those five nominees. They're going to think, what is the most bloodless possible choice? And then they will make that choice. And this year, what that meant is that Kendrick Lamar, who was nominated for seven Grammys, he was not up for Song of the Year, but he was up for Record of the Year and Album of the Year. So Kendrick Lamar made Damn, which is like unquestionably the Album of the Year. And then the Grammy voters gave us Bruno Mars.
Yeah.
And Bruno Mars is a game performer. He is a fun pop star. He's just very willing. You know, he's performed at the Grammys year after year after year. But to say that 24 Karat Magic, this Bruno Mars record, is the Album of the Year, mm-hmm. it's one thing to say, like, that's what I like. That song was a big hit single. I could see him maybe getting a song award, but album against Damn?
Yeah. What do you think, Ronnie?
I mean, to me, it just feels like such a spineless pick. When you think about the last year and, you know, what's going on in the nation and politics and culturally, it just doesn't resonate with where we are in the country right now. I just hated to see it not go to Damn. I hated to not see it go to Jay-Z's album, which was super personal and really his most mature work after a career full of Grammy wins. It just felt really off point to me.
Yeah. How about you, Sydney?
Absolutely. I think it was a safe bet. And don't get me wrong, because Bruno Mars, you can cut a rug to Bruno Mars. Versace on the Floor is like, I think, mwah, chef's kiss. I think it's timeless. But it is not a defining album in Bruno's career, and it's not a defining album to talk about the scope of popular music this year. Absolutely not. I think Kendrick Lamar's Damn absolutely deserved it. His was more personal, prophetic. He even leaned a little bit pop with Loyalty and XXX.
Oh, Love is a gorgeous ballad.
Absolutely. Exactly. He pushed the envelope, but he also stayed true to himself, where Bruno Mars, I think he stayed right in his pocket. It's an entertaining pocket, and you know what you're going to get with Bruno, but it was a safe bet.
Yeah.
I do want to say it could have been so much worse.
That is true.
Because
that is definitely true.
Because now I was talking to our editor, Jacob Gans, like trying to figure out exactly the system because it changes all the time. Mm-hmm. But basically, Grammy nominees are chosen kind of by committee, particularly for those upper echelon awards.
Yeah.
There's a panel that kind of pulls the five nominees that they want. And it's kind of designed to prevent catastrophic embarrassment.
How's it working?
Well, let's talk about 1995 when Tony Bennett's MTV Unplugged won Album of the Year. Was that the album of 1995? No, it was not. Ed Sheeran was not nominated for Album of the Year, Song of the Year, or Record of the Year in a huge, huge upset. And in my mind, my conspiracy-addled brain says there was a panel that tried really, really hard to keep the headline from this night from being Ed Sheeran sweeps Kendrick Lamar. Mm-hmm. So instead, Bruno Mars swept Kendrick Lamar.
Yeah, we were talking about the fact that a few years ago, the talk was all about how Macklemore had swept all the rap Grammys and, you know, in a year when people were rooting for Kendrick Lamar. Mm-hmm. So it's like Kendrick Lamar is gradually being defeated by less upsetting, like less likely to make for irate headlines mm-hmm. people. I guess. It's,
the Grammys Absolutely. Are humiliating themselves a tiny bit
like
less.
Just enough. And it's crazy because Kendrick Lamar, he's built himself up to be hip hop's golden boy, but he's always going to hit that ceiling, it seems like. And going back to him getting snubbed, I don't even want to say snubbed because snubbed is, I think, an overused word. He was snuffed, he was stomped out, he was sent to bed without dinner because mm-hmm. he didn't kiss ass and do extra credit. And then Macklemore winning the award and screenshotting a text conversation mm-hmm. between him and Kendrick, that was just like icing on the cake, you yeah. know, a cake that nobody wanted to eat. Uh-huh. So the fact that, what is it, 4 years later, the Grammys are still paying and they're doing that atonement, I think that's good. Yeah. Kendrick deserves that, but he always is going to hit the ceiling.
Yeah.
Well, look at the album of the year for the last 4 years now. So 2015, Beyonce's self-titled album loses to Beck. 2016, Kendrick Lamar's To Pimp a Butterfly, which is a masterpiece, loses to Taylor Swift's 1989. Very, very predictable. Last year, Beyonce's Lemonade loses to Adele's 25. Mm-hmm. And now this year... So we're now 4 years running of either Beyonce or Kendrick Lamar deserving to win and then not winning, at least according to this particular panel.
Yeah. It's like a losing ping pong game or something.
We were talking a little bit before about the fact that, you know, a lot of people were watching Album of the Year really closely because of the rarity, as it's often reported, of hip-hop albums winning. Rodney, you were talking a little bit about that in the context of the Lauryn Hill and...
Yeah, because we tend to say that hip-hop has won Album of the Year twice. Lauryn Hill in 1999 for Miseducation and Outkast in 2004 for Speaker Box The Love Below. But when you think about it, hip-hop never really has won Album of the Year because both of those albums are not pure rap albums. You got Miseducation, which is heavily R&B. You got The Love Below, which is heavily pop. So really the Recording Academy has yet to nominate and win and award a purely rap album with Album of the Year.
Yeah. And before we get off of awards and go on to talk about performances a little bit, I want to go over and ask Sydney. I know that yes. you were very excited about Best New Artist.
Oh my gosh. it's still traumatic.
Okay.
That Alicia Cara won over my goddess girl, SZA. Did that really happen? Okay. So SZA, who is Kendrick Lamar's TDE label mate, she's also signed to RCA, she dropped a monster of a debut in 2017 with Control. It was her debut as a songwriter, as a singer, her main introduction to mainstream media, and she walked into the awards tonight being the most nominated woman. She had 5 nominations. She lost in every single category, but the one that really stings is Best New Artist because she was up against, and these are worthy competitors, yeah. she was up against Alicia Cara, Khalid, Lil Uzi Vert, and Julia Michaels. All worthy contenders, but there's without a doubt, SZA ruled 2017. Her debut album was culturally moving. It was genre shifting. She showed off some like courageous narratives. She changed the definition of what a woman could be in R&B. And it's just the cultural impact of Control was leaps and bounds ahead of Four Pink Walls, which was Alicia Cara's debut back in 2015. Again, why are we living in the past, right?
Yeah, that's a whole other thing.
It's just disrespectful, and I feel offended. I don't know.
You're feeling that one.
I need more time to process yeah. it. But you know what? But you know what, guys? I looked it up. Let's not even trip. Because let's talk about some artists who lost Best
oh, yeah.
New Artist.
Oh, mm-hmm, my God. Mm-hmm, this category. Mm-hmm.
Alanis Morissette, Boyz II Men, J. Cole, Drake, Justin Bieber, Kendrick Lamar. Like, the list of superstars goes on, and the list of duds. Yeah. I think, Stephen, you told me it became like a kiss of death
for
at one
for
point.
A while. It was actually considered a curse, and then there was a run of like Adele started. Yeah, you know, like yeah. There was a run where like major stars who kept being major stars won it. But for a while, it was like Arrested Development, Christopher Cross. I think didn't the Starland Vocal Band win Best New
Could
Artist?
Be.
It
Could
was
be.
it was a joke for a long.
You're suggesting
time.
The Starland Vocal Band isn't cool?
I would suggest I would never besmirch the good name.
Yeah, I mean, as you were describing, SZA. That was my exact thought was like, she might be too cool to be Best New Artist.
Maybe. I don't know where she is, but she's probably flipping her hair. She's living a good life. She's okay. But it was just, it's a personal album. It's a prophetic album. It was totally genre shifting. I can't. I digress. I need a minute, guys.
Sydney is, I mean, you don't need my backup. Sydney
it's
is completely right.
So
that record
upsetting.
Is amazing. That record is fantastic.
Yeah. Some of the folks we've already talked about performed. Bruno Mars performed with Cardi B. That was a fun performance,
yeah.
I thought.
Yeah.
And Kendrick Lamar performed with one of the many times we saw U2.
Bono.
Yeah. Did you forget, Ronnie?
I forgot. It was so quick.
Yeah. And Dave Chappelle, little appearance
you
in
know,
there.
It's interesting. Like, I just popped into my head now, but when you think about... You have Kendrick Lamar, like, doing his thing, this incredibly visually imaginative. I mean, it's his awards show thing. You're glued to the set.
Yeah.
And then U2 pops on, like, and Peggy.
Yeah, it really like, is.
And then they were just gone.
Yeah, it's true. And then they leave immediately. For every welcome that is sought. Run your life. I live a better life. I'm rolling several dice. Run your life. I live a better life. I'm rolling several dice. Run your life. I live a regular life. This is my heritage. All I'm inheriting money and power to make a marriage. Give me something. You can't. But I do think one of the performances that I heard people kind of responding to the most was Kesha.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And Stephen, you've talked about how much you love her record. This seemed to be the only time that the Grammys really openly engaged with the Me Too, Time's Up kind of stuff that's been going around. It was so big at the Golden Globes,
yeah.
which were kind of our last big award show. At this, it was very muted, except then in the middle, you had this performance by Kesha, who's been embroiled in these legal battles and, you know, with her label and regarding her contract.
And her producer.
Her producer. She had this kind of huge, I don't know, to me, huge moment.
Yeah. Well, she was introduced by Janelle Monáe.
Mm-hmm.
Who already comes out and just brings an enormous amount of gravitas and power.
Artists, writers, assistants, publicists, CEOs, producers, engineers, and women from all sectors of the business. We are also daughters, wives, mothers, sisters, and human beings. We come in peace, but we mean business.
So Kesha took the stage. She was backed by actually the Resistance Revival Chorus, which is an offshoot of the Women's March. So she had a bunch of singers behind her, and then she was flanked by everyone from kind of fresh faces like Camila Cabello and Andra Day, to veterans like Cyndi Lauper. So she was just surrounded by kind of supportive talent. Like the song itself, she sang Praying. It was just pure intensity.
Yeah.
And part of what I react to so much about that song, you know, the single that was on the radio is a very pure studio vocal. And when she's performing it live, I've seen her perform it in concert, in person, as well as on this as on awards shows, the vocal is raw. It's rougher.
Yeah.
She's not swinging for that really high power note, but she's absolutely pouring every fiber of her being into that performance, and she's screaming it without losing control of the vocal. It was just this very, very raw and real and powerful moment. I also wanted to just add to it for people who were moved by that performance to check out that whole record. That Rainbow album is such a joy. In addition to the power of that song, there's so much fun and silliness and that kind of smart stupidity that she does in her big pop songs like TikTok. I hope that people came away. I thought it was the best performance of the night. I hope people come away from it, if they haven't embraced her yet, to spend some time with that record.
But even though she has, you know, she has really been part of the music industry grappling with some of this stuff, she's alleged abuse and assault by her producer. She has been in this long battle to try to get out of her contract. Yeah. Despite that, and despite the fact that she's kind of at the center of this moment, the music industry in general has not, is not in the same place that Hollywood is. And that's not to say Hollywood's in a great place necessarily, right, but their presentation of it is not in the same kind of place yet.
Yeah, I mean, I think that music is, it's still a long way to go for music to grapple with that. I mean, as so many people have acknowledged, it's such a part of music in terms of, you know, the sexism and, you know, every genre is kind of foundationally built around a lot of that stuff that I don't know if music will be able to sincerely grapple with that in a real way until the music itself starts to. You know, I don't know if seeing it at an award show is going to really be enough.
Yeah.
When you think about, you know, what's happened on the hip hop side, when you think about the fact that so many women or so few women continue to be even nominated, which a lot of writers made a point about this year. It's really not surprising to me that the music side continues to struggle with how to deal with this Me Too moment, you know?
Yeah. We do want to talk about just a couple of the performances, a couple of the other performances, including the fact that, you know, there was a report in Variety that Lorde did not perform.
Right.
She was the only woman nominated for Album of the Year. And the report in Variety said that she had not been offered the opportunity to perform solo. They had offered her the opportunity to be part of essentially a Tom Petty tribute. After the award ceremony, the guy from the Academy was asked about this and said, essentially, you don't, can't have time for everybody to perform. And you, and yet, there was so much kind of retro. And it's always true, but it seemed like it was retro in this narrow, like it was Elton John and Sting and U2, which is, I guess, a little less retro than Elton John. But, like, still these really, like, legacy rock act, not even rock acts, like whatever.
You don't have infinite space. I mean, and of course it's so easy at the end of a 3.5 hour telecast to point to the moments that didn't work and say you could have taken that out and put
everything
in more.
Everything with James Corden.
Well, we'll get to that in a second. But you had Sting perform his 1987 hit Englishman in New York, which even for Sting's solo career was kind of a minor hit. And I understand the immigration, there's an immigration message underneath that they're trying to get across. They brought out Sting like 3 times.
You have a problem with Sting?
No, it's nothing against Sting. It's just, this is a lot of Sting.
It was a lot of Sting.
Too much Sting.
It was a lot of Sting. It was more Sting than even Bruno Mars.
Didn't understand.
I still say, get rid of James Corden, bring back LL Cool J.
Which says so much that, that you and so many people were asking for LL to return.
All right. Well, this has been really fun. I'm so glad you could all come in. Thank you, Rodney and Sydney, especially. You had a long night of work.
Thank you all so much.
Yeah.
It's great.
Our
and as always, Stephen, good to see you.
Oh, I just love the Grammys.
And thanks to all of you for listening. And we'll be back here on Friday. And if you have a second and you're so inclined, do give us a review on Apple Podcasts. That will help other people to find the show. And we will see all of you on Friday.